Good evening and welcome to the Jack Jewett Candidate Forum, sponsored by the Free Enterprise Forum. Thanks for coming out. I anticipate we'll have some stragglers coming in. We had a number, I think it's at least three football games rescheduled from Friday night to tonight, but I really appreciate you being here. My name is Neil Williamson. I serve as the Executive Director of the Free Enterprise Forum, and I'll be serving as your moderator this evening. As a courtesy to the candidates and those around you, I request that if you have a cell phone or pager, turn it off at this time. This evening, we'll be covering a number of critical issues facing the Albemarle County Board of Supervisors in the coming years. Each of the candidates will make a brief opening statement, and then we will go through a number of prepared questions. We will alternate the questions until around 8:30, when I will allow the candidates an opportunity to make a brief closing statement. After both candidates give their closing statement, I will have a few remarks. We will then break from the formal meeting to give everyone an opportunity to visit directly with the candidates on a one-on-one basis. Each of the candidates has received the questions and the ground rules, and we're going to move forward with the timekeeper today. On the basis of a coin flip, we have Mr. Rooker with the opening statement first, and then we'll be hearing from Mr. Schoenwald. Please join me in welcoming the candidates. Mr. Rooker.
Welcome, everyone. Thank you for being here tonight. Can you hear me okay? I've been honored to have represented the Jack Jewett District on the Board of Supervisors for the last 4 years and to have served as chairman during the last year. Prior to this, I served on the Planning Commission for the area for 4 years. I've been on the Transportation Committees for the area for 15 years, serve on the Fiscal Impact Committee for 10 years in the county. I've lived here for 35 years. I'm a graduate of the University of Virginia, undergraduate in law schools. I've operated businesses over the last 20 years that have employed more than 100 people, and I'm an independent. It's kind of interesting to note that this district has been held by an independent for 28 consecutive years. My record has emphasized protecting the environment and natural resources, supporting a fiscally sound government, providing the necessary support for an excellent education system, and cooperating with our neighboring localities. Here are a few of our accomplishments over the last couple of years. Our schools are performing in the top 10% in the state and in the nation on standardized tests. Our schools are all fully SOL accredited. Our comprehensive high schools are in the top 4% in the country, all of them, based on the J. Matthews Index. We lowered our tax rate to 74 cents, which is the lowest tax rate in the state of any county with more than 90,000 population. We're the smallest county in the country to have a AAA bond rating, which is the highest rating for debt by Moody's Investor Services. In 2004, our unemployment rate was the ninth lowest in the nation, and our rate of job growth was the highest in the state. Our county has been selected as one of the 10 best counties in the country for its use of technology. We recently adopted a rural area plan, a new subdivision ordinance, and a new groundwater protection ordinance. Our police department has just celebrated its 20th anniversary and is one of the few in the state that is fully accredited. We're implementing a new emergency communication system right now. We've expanded our fire and rescue services throughout the county, built a new fire and rescue station near Monticello High School, and we have plans for a new station in the northern growth area of the county. And our acquisition of conservation easement program has saved more than 3,700 acres of important rural land. If reelected, those are the same kind of programs and policies that I will continue to pursue on your behalf.
Thank you. Christian?
I'd like to thank the Free Enterprise Forum for hosting this event, and I'd like to thank all of you for being here tonight. Let me tell you a little bit about who I am. I graduated from American University's School of Public Affairs. I served in the Clinton White House, despite what some people in the community might accuse me of. And for the last several years, I've actually worked as an independent consultant, helping form partnerships between companies and organizations to facilitate greater economic opportunity. My entire professional life has been devoted to creating greater cooperation amongst groups of people to make their overall lives and businesses better. There are three primary issues facing Albemarle County during this election: affordability, growth, and defense of people's rights. As it stands right now with the Kelo decision from the Supreme Court, local governments have more power than they've ever had in the history of the Republic. This is a responsibility that we have to watch very carefully in our leaders. We have to make sure that we don't abuse people's rights, particularly here in Albemarle County, where so much of our republic got its start. We have to remember that rights are fundamental. As we deal with property rights, we also have to solve the problems of affordability and growth. Those two problems and the defense of rights are not incompatible goals. It takes political will, it takes vision, but it is possible to defend rights, solve our affordability problem, and manage growth in a responsible and common sense fashion.
Thank you, gentlemen. We now move to the questions portion. The first question is to Mr. Schoenwald. Mr. Schoenwald, Albemarle County is working on the implementation of the rural areas chapter of the comprehensive plan. The top priorities are phasing and rural preservation cluster development. Do you agree with these priorities? What is your position regarding phasing and cluster development? Do you have a favored time/number release? Why do you believe people are developing in the rural areas?
Rural preservation is something that is actually very important to me, and that may sound strange coming from a Republican, but even conservative Republicans like the environment. I moved down here from Northern Virginia because of the destruction of the environment that happened in the northern portion of our state. I want to make sure that the rural character and nature of Albemarle County is preserved. Clustering, in and of itself, is a good idea. It allows us to break off small portions of land to be developed, and it leaves large, usable, agriculturally useful tracts of land intact. On the other side of that issue, we have phasing as an additional layer to slow down development in the rural places. Phasing is not a good idea on two levels. First, it abridges people's property rights and tells them when they can and cannot sell off parcels of their land. Government should not be able to do that to you. If it's your land, you have the right to sell it when you want to sell it and to whom you want to sell it to. That is fundamental as an American. Second problem is that phasing does not really stop the developers from having larger development tracts in the rural area. All you have to do is get a group of landowners together, have them sell off adjacent parcels of land in a central location between their properties, and you have a large development. So there are ways around phasing. It is not a catch-all solution, and it goes too far in abridging people's property rights to be worth a solution that we should invest in. As far as why people are developing in the rural places in the county, there's two reasons. First, people like to live in the country. I know I lived in Washington, D.C. for a while, and I've lived in other cities. My goal has always been to get out to the country to have some land and a house that's separated from my neighbors a bit. It is a very natural thing to want some space between you and your neighbors. That makes country living attractive to people. The other reason that development is going on in the rural areas is because right now it's easier to build in the rural places than it is in the designated growth areas. The neighborhood model and the restrictions that it places on pre-planning and approval processes makes it very difficult, in the opinion of a lot of developers, to build in the designated growth areas. So they turn to the rural places where it is much easier to develop, much faster, and allows them a greater profit margin. If we want to preserve our rural places, we need to encourage people to build in the designated growth areas with incentives, not keep them from growing in the rural areas with restrictions.
First of all, I agree with the priorities of phasing and clustering. Protection of our rural areas and our natural resources is our highest priority in the comprehensive plan. We take it very seriously. 95% of the land in the county is in the rural areas. The rural areas house our water, our air quality, our biodiversity. The new rural area plan, which is referred to in this question, was adopted by the board. I worked on that for 3 years. It contains more than 100 strategies for helping to further preserve the rural land in the county. We've established a goal at our strategic retreat to implement those strategies over the next 4 years. Phasing and clustering are two of the most important strategies to protecting our rural areas. As phasing basically is a time release program where lots can get released for development over a period of time. What that does is it prevents big developers like Ryan Holmes from coming in and buying up a big tract of rural land and putting in 200 homes and putting it on the market and advertising it in the Northeast to bring people into Admiral County. That's exactly what we're trying to stop. Clustering, basically, as we see it, foresee it, would require 80% preservation tracts in rural area developments. The development would be clustered on the other 20%. What that does is it assures that as the rural areas get developed out over time, there will be large tracts of undeveloped property throughout the county. I don't have a favored release rate at present. We sent that issue to the Planning Commission to discuss, hold hearings on, and come back to us with a recommendation. People develop in the rural areas because they can. It's an option. There are about 16,000 parcels in the rural area. People have an option of building a house on those parcels. As a matter of state law, we can't stop that from happening. But we do have a strategy of protecting the rural areas through conservation of large tracts of land. We now have 10% of the land in the county in conservation easements. We set a goal to increase that to 15% over the next 4 years. That was a goal I recommended at our strategic planning session. And the second part of that strategy is to induce people to live in the growth areas by providing for a better form of development. And that is by we are master planning our development areas so that the development areas have a plan so that they're not developed randomly. We are in the process right now of master planning the Route 29 growth area in the county. It's about a year-and-a-half process. It's very public participatory. Hope that you get out and participate in that process. Other things we have done in the growth areas to try to maintain the quality of life there are things like the Architectural Review Board corridors. Every major commercial corridor coming into Admiral County requires that development be approved by an Architectural Review Board with respect to the buildings in the landscaping. That has had a profound aesthetic effect on the county over the last 10 years. If you look at the areas like Pantops, we're going to have car dealers locate in Admiral County. It's part of commerce. The question is, what are they going to look like, and where are they going to be located? If you look at the Free Bridge Auto, if you remember the old Free Bridge Auto at the bottom of Route 250, and look at Free Bridge Auto that was built on Pantops under the Architectural Review Board guidelines, I think you see a significant difference. So I think that our approach is working. Right now we have about 4,000 lots that have been approved or close to approval in the growth areas, which is about a five-year stock of lots. And there's no reason from a supply standpoint why people can't elect that better option of going into the growth areas.
Thank you. Mr. Schoenwald, I'm sorry, Mr. Rooker, the next question is to you. I apologize.
It's all right.
95% of Albemarle County is in the rural areas. What is your vision for the rural areas?
In one sentence, it's that it remain rural and that we protect our natural resources. We have adopted, and I'll give you a few more sentences, because we've adopted a set of guiding principles for the rural areas as a part of our comprehensive plan, and I participated in drafting those. I'll go over a couple of those with you. Protect Albemarle County's agricultural lands as a resource base for its agricultural industries and for related benefits they contribute towards the county's rural character, scenic quality, natural environment, and fiscal health. We've adopted a land use taxation program to help farmers retain their land. Protect Albemarle County's forests as a resource base for its forestry industries and watershed protection. We've adopted an agricultural forestal plan to help preserve forest property. Permanently preserve and protect Albemarle County's rural land as an essential and finite resource through public ownership or through conservation easements. As I stated earlier, 10% of the land of the county is now in conservation easement, and our goal is to increase that by 50%. Protect Albemarle County's rural land through planned management of open spaces and to prevent exploitation, destruction, or neglect. Protect the quality and supply of surface water and groundwater resources. We adopted a new groundwater protection ordinance to further the goals of that guiding principle. preserve and manage the county's natural areas in order to protect the environment and conserve resources for future use. We adopted a biodiversity section to the comprehensive plan to further that goal. Preserve the county's rural scenic resources as being essential to the county's character, economic vitality, and quality of life. We've adopted a mountain protection plan as a part of the comprehensive plan to further that goal. Protect the rural area's historic, archaeological, and cultural resources. We've adopted an historic preservation plan to help further that goal. And finally, protect and enhance the rural quality of life for present and future rural area residents. Those are in the comprehensive plan for Albemarle County. I helped draft those, and they certainly reflect my vision for the county's rural areas.
Mr. Schoenwald?
In many ways, my vision for the rural sections of Albemarle County are very similar to my opponent's. I'd like to see the area preserved. I'd like to see Albemarle retain its rural character, the thing that makes Albemarle County so special. There are ways to do it properly, and there are ways to do it by force. I think that we have to make sure that we protect the rights of the people that own the rural parcels and give them incentives to keep those as rural parcels. We need to do things such as encouraging and promoting rural businesses, agriculture, forestry, nature-based tourism, things that actually make preserving the rural parts of the county profitable. And I know it sounds a little strange to make nature profitable, but you can do it, and it does set up for a rural business model that makes people want to keep their land rural rather than developed into subdivisions or businesses. The other part of protecting our rural lands is the idea that we need to make it attractive for developers to build in the designated growth areas. We do this by making the neighborhood model not the model, but a model of many options. If we make it easier for developers to build in the designated growth areas than build in the rural areas, we'll go that much further to protecting those rural spaces. It is important to give incentives rather than punishments. People tend to respond much better to positive reinforcement than to negative. We don't want to make enemies out of the developers. We want to turn them into our allies so that they'll do the types of projects and the type of building that we want to see done and respect our interest in preserving our rural areas. Finally, I want to address the Mountaintop Preservation Act. As far as I understand this act, if it would have been in place several hundred years ago, Monticello never would have been built. If you talk to people that have houses on mountains, they'll tell you one thing. I look out of my front door every day and I see all those houses living in the valley. I'd like to see a Valley Preservation Act so I don't have to see your rooftops. It becomes myopic if we only view sheds going one direction. It works both ways. We have to respect the rights of all parties involved and not go off of our own personal agendas to see our own aesthetics in place in the county.
Thank you. Mr. Schoenwald, the next question is to you. In 1999, Albemarle County approved a two-year test program to acquire the purchase development rights using county funds. Although the matter was to be reviewed by the board in public hearings held after this two-year test, this has not occurred, and the funding has continued as a part of the budget process. The majority of these funds come from the lodging tax placed on hotels. In 2002, Albemarle County was one of only two counties using the lodging tax for this purpose. As of 2003, Albemarle County was the only locality using the lodging tax, which was originally designated for promotion, to acquire conservation easements. What is your opinion of the acquisition of conservation easements program in Albemarle? Would you continue funding? Where would these funds come from? And would you require public access?
I think that ACE is a very important program. It goes very far to provide that carrot that I've been talking about rather than the stick. It also respects people's fundamental property rights. It gives them an option rather than simply having their land seized in the name of economic opportunity or prosperity for the county. ACE is a program that needs to be continued, and we need to look at the funding sources. I'm troubled that the hearings were never conducted. I very much believe that when the government says it's going to do something, it is incumbent upon that government to follow through on that word and actually do what it says. If it doesn't do what it says, we have to hold that government to account. Those leaders that didn't follow through on their word have to be held account. It have to be held to account for what they did. And we have to ask the question, why didn't you do it, and why are you still continuing to operate under a situation that you said you wouldn't operate under? We should have those hearings now, and I'm certain that ACE would continue after those hearings are done, but we need to have a frank and open discussion about how ACE is going to be funded. As far as a lot of the funding coming from the lodging tax, I find that to be troublesome. It's very much like asking a guest in your own home to pay you some money so that you can put an addition on your house years down the road. We shouldn't be charging our guests to this county additional money so that we can pursue a goal that we've identified as a community that we want to carry out on an internal basis. If conservation of our land in Albemarle County is truly important to us, that's a burden that we need to take on our own. That's not something that we place on the backs of people coming here that are already spending dollars to give some of us jobs and incomes. Again, it's an internal issue that we've decided is important. We need to pay for it ourselves rather than having other people do it. ACE is important. I want to see it continue. I like the idea of an incentive rather than a restriction on people to preserve rural lands. I think it's an important program, and it should continue, but we should be the ones carrying it, and those hearings have to happen in order for our government to be thought of as responsible and living up to its word.
Mr. Rucker?
I agree with the ACE program. I voted for it. I was a strong supporter for it. It has preserved 3,700 acres of rural land and retired 229 development rights. Yes, I would support continuing to fund it. I've even suggested that we dedicate 1 cent of the tax rate to the ACE program, which would basically index it for inflation and make certain that we get the same kind of buying power going forward as we had when we started the program. This thing about the hearing, the ACE program is being funded every year. The decision is made whether or not to fund the ACE program. Every year, a hearing is held on the county budget, and every year, that item is on the budget for discussion. So I think that's a complete misrepresentation to suggest that this program was adopted as a something that would be, that in 2 years, it would come back and there'd be some separate hearing on it. We hold a hearing every year to determine whether or not to allocate any money to it. The meals occupancy tax, part of the money that goes to the ACE program comes from the meals and occupancy tax, and part of it comes from the county's general budget. Tourism and other businesses benefit from the preservation of rural areas and natural resources. Natural beauty is good for the tourism industry. To suggest that people that come into the area shouldn't pay an occupancy tax, well, that tax has been on the books for a long time. I don't know if my opponent is suggesting that we repeal the occupancy tax, but the occupancy tax was adopted after a long discussion in the community and after a referendum on it. So I think that the people decided that they wanted to have an occupancy tax. It's something virtually every other community in the country has, and to not have it would simply be to give up a revenue source that we can obtain from people to come to visit our community. We're not buying the issue of public access. I would not support requiring public access to property that's part of the ACE program. The reason is we're not buying the property. We buy the development rights. And the value of that package that's being purchased is only based upon the lost development rights. We're not paying the full value for the property. The idea is that the property itself will remain in farming or some other agricultural use, but that it can never be developed.
This formerly question three. Are you in favor of Albemarle County joining the Thomas Jefferson Partnership for Economic Development? Why or why not? And, Mr. Rucker, the question is yours.
Yes. I have not been in favor of joining the Thomas Jefferson Economic Development Partnership over the years. It is a nonprofit advocacy group with a stated purpose of increasing economic development in the area. It was formed by a group of private business people. They have asked public parties to join. Some of the areas in the some of the communities and areas have joined, others have not. We have had a policy on the board of not joining advocacy groups. The Thomas Jefferson Planning District Commission does good work. Excuse me, the TJPED does good work. They bring us good ideas. I've talked to prospects that they've brought in that they're interested in having come into the area. But so does PEC, the Piedmont Environmental Council. So does Advocates for Sustainable Albemarle Population. So does the Chamber of Commerce. So does the League of Women Voters. So does the Sierra Club. They all do good work. They're all advocacy groups that can come before the board to advocate for particular positions. And we have, as a policy matter, decided not to join advocacy groups in the past. Second, we don't need to be spending public funds to stimulate additional growth in this community. We need to focus on managing growth and providing for the infrastructure for that growth. 1,500 to 2,000 people a year are moving into this community every year. That's without spending any money, public money, to try to get more people to come here. We have the lowest unemployment rate, one of the lowest unemployment rates in the nation, one of the fastest rates of job growth in the state. Employers like Sperry Marine added about 75 high-paid employees last year. State Farm is adding a couple hundred employees. UVA has $600 million of construction going on right now, which has added 1,200 jobs to the community. They're expanding their student body, their faculty. They're expanding the hospital, medical facilities, hiring more people. This year they attracted $313 million of research community, research dollars into the community. And according to them, that will produce about 1,000 jobs. NGIC just announced that they're going to, which is the National Ground Intelligence Center, they're going to add 1,200 jobs over the next 3 or 4 years. So the other reason, I don't think we need to attract growth, but one of the other reasons why I don't think it's a good idea to join this is there's a legal prohibition against any member of the Board of Supervisors since sitting on this board. The statutes don't authorize us to sit on the board. Finally, we belong to the regional planning body that we are authorized by state law to belong to, and that's the Thomas Jefferson Planning District Commission. Board of Supervisors members serve on that planning district commission. There is an economic development committee for that commission. That involves six different surrounding jurisdictions. And we are one of two communities that has adopted the Thomas Jefferson Planning District Commission economic development policy.
Thank you. Mr. Schoenwald?
The short answer to whether or not we should join TJPED is yes, we should. Every other county, the city of Charlottesville, the University of Virginia are all members of TJPED. We are the only regional entity, governmental entity, that is not a member. There is no reason for that to be the case. TJPED is concerned with making sure that economic development happens in the region. There are plenty of other economic development partnerships around the state that are all public-private partnerships, and they've worked in the other regions, particularly in Southwest Virginia. I find it interesting that when all of the governments around us can be a member, and when governments in other portions of the state can join other economic development partnerships, for some reason Albemarle County tells us that we can't. There's an inconsistency in message. Either we're doing something wrong, or every other county around us is doing something wrong. TJPED membership helps us bring better paying jobs into Albemarle County. Lately, we've been shifting from high-tech, high-paying jobs to low-tech, service sector retail jobs. Over the last 6 years, we've gained more jobs than we've lost, but the jobs that we've gained typically pay 40% less than the jobs that we lost from this county. We've let businesses leave, businesses like ComDial, businesses like Technicolor, ConAgra, Pyramid Construction. These organizations have left the company because the county didn't really want to keep them here. There was no serious effort made to keep those businesses in town. And in the next few months, we're going to be losing one or two more businesses that have been in Albemarle County for a very long time. And that's something that is very dangerous. We have to become more pro-business if we're going to solve the affordability crisis that's looming in Albemarle County. Joining TJPED is one step in the proper direction. The other benefit from joining TJPED is the appearance, and it's a genuine appearance, of wanting to be more business-friendly and wanting to work with the organizations in the region. This will help bring state transportation dollars back into Albemarle County. As long as we appear unfriendly to business and unwilling to work in partnership with other organizations, the state and VDOT is going to look at Albemarle County as a place to not invest, and we're going to continue to lose out on our share of transportation dollars. Should we join TJPED? Simple answer, yes.
Thank you. Next question is number 5, and the question is to you, Mr. Schoenwald. There has been significant discussion in recent months of having lost several large businesses because of Albemarle's reputation of being, quote, unfriendly to business. Part of the master planning process requires attracting small businesses to the county. Many would argue that a 90,000 square foot big box has the same impact as 10 9,000 square foot boutiques. How important is the business community to the future of Albemarle County? Should particular businesses be encouraged or discouraged from coming to Albemarle County? Who and how?
The business community is vitally important to the future of Albemarle County. Oftentimes, we like to demonize business people as only being out for profit in themselves, but we have to realize something. It's the business community that provides most of the people in our community with jobs so that they can afford their houses and their lifestyles. When we turn the business community into enemies, we're essentially shooting ourselves in the foot, saying we really don't want good-paying jobs. Our current focus on commercial development is a mistake. We're pushing away career ladder jobs. Let's face facts. If you're working at a big box or a boutique store, there's not much of a career ladder there. You're pretty much looking at working a cash register or waiting tables for a significant number of years without any real hope for a better job down the road. There's certainly no promotion prospects in place. We have to attract jobs back into the county that take advantage of the high level of education and skill we have here. 88%+ of our population graduates from high school. 44%+ have college degrees. That is an exceptionally skilled workforce. My opponent is right. We have a very low unemployment rate, but we have a high underemployment rate, roughly 9%. That means that people are taking jobs that pay far below their investment in themselves justifies. They've gone out and gotten their college degrees, and they're working cash registers. That's wrong, and that's a disservice to those people. We need to refocus our efforts on attracting business to the county, businesses that are in line with the goals of the University of Virginia and its attempts to become a greater research university. There we're speaking of medical and biotech firms. We need to attract high-tech companies that have minimal environmental impact. And we should also take a page from the Roanoke Valley and try to attract value-added manufacturing, which, again, has low impact on the environment. Albemarle County's environment is very important. We can bring high-skilled, high-paying jobs into the county without sacrificing the environment, without having to bring smokestacks in. We do a lot of this by joining TJPED and working on making Albemarle County a business-friendly place. We can't demonize the businessmen. They're the ones that give us our jobs. They're the ones that give us our lifestyles. If we make them the enemy, we've basically shot ourselves in the foot. We have to fix the affordability problem, and we do that with better jobs.
Mr. Rooker?
Yeah, first, I'd like to correct a statement my opponent made. He discussed Comdow leaving because the county wasn't friendly to business. Comdow was a publicly traded company that was going into bankruptcy and moved its operations to Florida, where its CEO lived. Technicolor, which he said left the county because it was unfriendly to business, moved to Greene County long before, was bought out by a group of venture capitalists who found they could produce the product cheaper in Mexico. The county is not unfriendly to business. Business benefits from all the steps that the county takes to preserve and protect the quality of life. Albemarle County is one of the most vibrant economies in the country. We have created a climate in which business can thrive. We have the ninth lowest unemployment rate in the nation. In 2004, we had the highest rate of job growth in the state in 2004. The goose that lays the golden egg in Albemarle County is the quality of life. People come here, they want to operate their businesses here because of the high quality of life. Business also benefits from the excellent top 10% education system we have in Albemarle County. We have a strategy for helping in the master planned areas with businesses locating that will fit the master plan. We've hired a person to accomplish that. That doesn't mean there was a part of this question that dealt with big boxes. That doesn't mean that we don't have big boxes in the county. We have a Lowe's, we have a Target, we have a Sam's, we have a Walmart. But it is appropriate to expect that when big boxes come into the community, that they meet our community goals and our design requirements. Other communities demand that, and Albemarle County should continue demanding that. The business community is important to our future. We need to deal fairly and evenly with the business community. We need to meet with them, which I have done many times. I've met with their prospects many times. But we also need to reach out to environmental groups, retired persons, educators, police, firefighters. All those groups are important to our future. We encourage certain types of businesses through our land use policies in Albemarle County. And we want to make certain that they're a high level of business. Look at Peter Jefferson Place. Look at the quality of that development. The Fontaine Research Park. The UVA Research Park. The NGIC facility. In the future, the Blue Ridge property, which is at the corner of 64 and 20, owned by the University Real Estate Foundation, will probably be developed out as a biotech and research park. Those are low-impact, clean businesses that have a reason to be here. They're not going to pick up the marbles like Comdal and Technicolor and run because they can produce their CDs cheaper in Mexico than they can here. That kind of company, that kind of high-level operation provides stability in our economy. It's the reason why we have never had a high unemployment rate in Albemarle County.
Thank you. The next question is question six, and it's to you, Mr. Rooker. Please explain your understanding / vision for the implementation of the neighborhood model in Albemarle County. Is it a model or the model? There has been a hue and cry for the concurrency of infrastructure in those areas that have been master planned. How do you believe this should be addressed?
First of all, the neighborhood model, there's kind of a myth about the neighborhood model. Let me tell you what the neighborhood model asks for. And this is in the growth areas of Albemarle County where we expect to have more dense development. Pedestrian orientation, neighborhood-friendly streets and paths, transportation networks and interconnected streets, parks and open spaces, mixed-use development, neighborhood centers, building in spaces of human scale, relegated parking, that's parking that doesn't dominate the site, affordability with dignity, redevelopment, site planning that respects terrain and clear boundaries with the rural areas. The vision is to provide development that meets those attributes in the growth areas. The question of whether or not it is a model or the model, I've never heard it called anything other than a model for development in the development areas. What we do is we don't expect necessarily that every development is going to meet every one of the 12 principles. There may be site situations that make it impossible to connect streets. It may be site situations that make it impossible to create a pedestrian link in certain cases. But we do expect that the high quality that we're looking for development in this community will be met by the proposals that we approve. The county needs to provide infrastructure where and when needed, and the county is doing that. We have a capital improvement plan, which is a 5-year capital improvement plan. We also have a long-range capital plan. Crozet is an example. We spent over $70 million on infrastructure in Crozet. We have $20 million of infrastructure investment scheduled to be made in Crozet over the next 5 years. The water system in Crozet was built out. Today it has 600% of the capacity needed. The water treatment system has 300% of the capacity needed. The wastewater treatment system has 250% of the capacity needed. The neighborhood model doesn't create need for infrastructure. People moving into the area create need for infrastructure. The neighborhood model actually reduces the infrastructure needs by providing for a more compact form of development. Think about 2,000 people scattered all out throughout the county. Think of the school busing requirements to bring those kids in and deliver them to school. Think of the police, fire, and rescue services trying to be provided to people, 2,000 people scattered all out throughout the community. The Old Trail development, which was approved not too long ago, is right beside schools. It has paths to the schools. It has a 40-acre park in the center of it. It has 9 miles of bicycle paths, 9 miles of sidewalks, almost as much open space as it has developed space. It is a great example of a mixed-use, walkable community. And those people don't need to go out on the roads, the highways, every time they're going to buy a loaf of bread, or their kid wants to go to school, or the kid is going to a playground. They can walk. They can bicycle to a lot of things. That takes people off of the roads.
Mr. Schoenwald.
There is a difference between a model and the model. If you talk to developers right now, they'll tell you that the model is the only one that's applied in the designated growth areas, and if they don't fit the requirements, they're not allowed to build there. That makes it easy. That makes it more attractive for them to go out and build in the rural parts of the county. We need to have a series of neighborhood models in place rather than simply one, because in not every part of the county is a high-density, pedestrian-friendly village going to be the appropriate type of development. Let me tell you a little bit about what the neighborhood model actually is. The neighborhood model follows a philosophy of development called new urbanism. As a matter of fact, one of the primary advocacy groups for new urbanism, 2 years in a row, has awarded the Albemarle County region awards for excellence in planning. The Crozet Master Plan won this award, and the Albemarle County Neighborhood Model also won an award from this organization. Their name is the Congress for the New Urbanism. Their primary goal is to promote new urbanist developments. There are a few other facts that you need to know about new urban developments. First off, typically, only 15% of anyone in a given population is actually interested in living in a new urban development. That means that the vast majority of people don't want to live in that kind of high-density, pedestrian-friendly setting. The other factor that we have to deal with has to do with the affordability of Albemarle County. Congress for the New Urbanism admits in its own literature that housing in new urban developments cost 25% more than houses of similar type in standard developments. That's a quarter more expensive than you'd find anywhere else. They also indicate in their literature that homes in new urban developments tend to have abnormally high increases in valuation, which means they become much more valuable much faster than other parcels, other types of developments. If we're going to use the neighborhood model as a method to solve some of the affordable housing problems in Albemarle County, it doesn't sound like that's a very good strategy when we have those properties costing a quarter more than they will anywhere else, and when those properties are going to valuate faster than other places. That sounds to me like a formula for only the wealthiest being able to afford to live in those places. We have to have a series of models that address different places and different citizens' needs. We also have to look at the idea that new urban developments, planting little cities around the county, is not going to necessarily be a very popular idea, and it is going to find us having more expensive places to live in the areas where we do plant those new urban miniature cities.
Thank you. The next question is question 7, and goes to you, Mr. Schoenwald. Given that a considerable amount of land within the designated development area either doesn't have utilities, roads, or other infrastructure, has difficult topography, and may have owners unwilling to sell, would you support expanding the residential growth areas as a strategy to keep development out of our rural areas?
Growth is a very important issue that we have to deal with. The common sense management of it seems to be the highest priority for most of the citizens in Albemarle County. I am not in favor of expanding the residential growth areas. We have plenty of that land set aside as it is. If we start to increase the development areas, we're going to lose more of the rural part of the county. We can't let that happen. We have to keep what we have. Moving to a multiplicity of neighborhood models allows for some of the easing of the infrastructure burdens. We also do have a system in place in conjunction with the RWSA to help with infrastructure development in areas that are going to be built. There's a question coming up later on that deals with having to put roads in place as well. Those two questions are answered basically the same way. We need to employ the same systems that we do right now to help developers with utility infrastructure, with road structure. We also have to understand that our citizens want certain things, and we have to give them those certain things. When we get to the question later on about the interconnectivity of neighborhoods, I'll deal with that issue a little bit further. But the primary focus here is, do we expand the residential growth areas? I think we shouldn't. If we're serious about preserving the rural parts of Albemarle County, we have to work with what we've set aside right now and find good solutions, again, that provide incentives rather than over-regulation of the situation.
Thank you. Mr. Rooker?
I agree with my opponent on the general question here, is that we should not look at expanding the residential growth areas in the county at this time. The growth areas have about 35 square miles of area, and the city of Charlottesville, by comparison, has about 10 square miles. So we have our growth areas constitute about 3.5 times the size of the city of Charlottesville. We have about 4,000 lots that have been approved or are close to approval in the development areas right now. There are something like 10,000 additional lots that people intend to file applications on over the next short period of time. Whether or not they'll be approved remains to be seen. But 4,000 lots, we issue about 850 building permits per year. That represents 4 or 5 years of building permits on a per annum basis that we've been issued. So I think we have plenty of capacity in the existing urban areas. My opponent said something earlier about 15% of the people being interested in living in mixed-use, pedestrian-friendly development areas. The Old Trail development is probably one of the first, what I would call, true neighborhood model areas that we've had come forward and be completed. The demand out there has been exceptional. They have sold every lot almost as soon as it came on the market. So I think that the experience here is that the demand is very high. There have been a couple of other neighborhood model developments that are much smaller in scale, and they have sold out. So I think that the demand in the market is saying otherwise. With respect to affordability, the Old Trail development, for example, proffered 15% affordable units. That's 300 affordable units being proffered with that development. One of the goals of the neighborhood model is to have mixed levels of affordability in the community. Old Trail, for example, will have houses that sell for $1.2 million, and they're going to have houses that sell for the $200,000 range. They're going to have apartments. Since we've had the neighborhood model on the books, we've had about 500 units proffered of affordable housing in the community. That's a significant stock of affordable housing that is coming forward now that was not coming forward before.
Thank you, Mr. Rooker. Mr. Rooker?
Yes, sir.
The next question is number 8, formerly number 9. Albemarle County is now working on implementing a housing affordability plan that is intended to help relieve the affordable housing crisis. What are your thoughts on the plan? How do you believe the county should address the need for not just affordable housing, but also workforce housing?
We amended our comprehensive plan recently to include an affordable housing component, and I supported that and intend to work to make certain it becomes a reality. The affordability issue is certainly not unique to this area. Housing prices have been skyrocketing all over the country. And I don't presume to think that government can cure all of those problems. But we've taken a number of steps. We appointed an affordable housing committee, which is made up of a number of people in the community, people in the mortgage lending business, realtors, developers, people with nonprofits, attorneys that work in the real estate area, to make recommendations to us concerning affordability and how we can best attack it. We've created a home buyers club, which educates low and moderate income people into how to buy a house and how to financially plan for buying a house. A very high percentage of the people who have gone through that program have purchased the house. We've created a housing trust fund at the recommendation of the Affordable Housing Committee, into which we have committed $500,000. We've received about another $400,000 of commitments from developers that have rezoned property. And that is used primarily to provide down payment assistance to people who have gone through the Home Buyers Club to help them into a house. We operate a rental assistance program, which is a housing choice voucher program where we provide assistance to 420 families, and that's actually federal and state money that we administer. County continues to support the operations of the Albemarle Housing Improvement Program, which historically has provided emergency repairs and housing rehabilitation to lower-income homeowners. Regarding the workforce housing issue, I mentioned earlier that part of our goal is to assure that on rezonings and special use permits, we either obtain 15% affordable housing or we obtain some kind of contribution to the housing trust fund to make up for that. With Old Trail and other developments, we've had about 500 units of affordable housing proffered. We also see the market responding and that we've had about 500 units of condo conversions that have occurred or are in the process of occurring. We've tried to facilitate that process. Those units are almost all affordable. We've done some specific programs that are of interest. The Yancey School Neighborhood Project was a five-year project that resulted in 30 houses being renovated or reconstructed, 15 dilapidated structures being removed, a community park and a community center developed, and 18 new homes being constructed. 154 persons were assisted, of which 24 were elderly or disabled. The project received the 2003 Governor's Housing Award for the best affordable housing project in Virginia. In the Jack Jewett District, we took on the Park's Edge Apartment Complex project, which was formerly Whitewood Road Apartments. It was becoming dilapidated, run down, and we were afraid we were going to lose that as an affordable housing facility in the community. We purchased and renovated that with a partnership involving private and public partners. We preserved the 96 units of affordable housing, substantially upgraded them, constructed a community center on the site that services the tenants, provides daycare services and educational services to the tenants.
Thank you. Mr. Schoenwald?
Affordable housing for not only the basic people that make our county run, our firefighters, our teachers, our police officers, is important. And in addition, affordable housing for the rest of us is equally as important. Albemarle County is becoming one of the most expensive places in the Commonwealth to live. It is becoming increasingly hard for any of us at any economic level, unless, of course, you're, you know, super wealthy beyond the imagination of mere mortals, to buy a house. It is important that we understand the components that make up the affordability crisis. The biggest two factors involved are jobs that aren't paying enough and don't offer enough career ladder opportunity, and the property tax situation. We solve a lot of our affordability crisis by encouraging higher tech, higher paying, higher skilled jobs to come into Albemarle County to raise our basic wage level up above where it is right now. The other side of that coin is the property taxes. We have to make sure that we keep the amount of money that people have to pay every year in their taxes lower than what it is right now. If we let the property tax rate continue the way it is, people that have bought houses in a short amount of time aren't going to be able to afford to keep those houses. That's a problem. We can offer up all of the low-income housing that we want, all of the housing purchase programs that we want, but if someone can't afford to keep the property taxes up on that property, they're not going to be able to stay there, and that's a serious problem. I support the government initiatives that have been done to make housing more affordable. Those are important programs. I also support the program that the Charlottesville Area Association of Realtors has undertaken to help teachers afford houses. Education is vitally important in this community, and we have a very good system. It seems unfair that our teachers have a hard time living here when we expect so much out of them in our education system. That should be a top priority. So really, the government programs are important. The private entity programs are important. Those need to be encouraged. We need to bring in better jobs so that people have more income, and we need to keep our property taxes in check so that once people actually have a property in this county, they can afford to keep it and not have to be forced into another part of the state.
Thank you. The next question is formerly number 10, and focuses on taxes. Albemarle County is contemplating an annual tax assessment program that will increase revenues to the county in the off years, those years that would not have seen an increase in assessment. What is your position on the annual assessment, and what would you, as supervisor, want to do with this windfall to the county?
I think that it is inappropriate for governments to ever contemplate getting a windfall. Essentially, that's the government dipping further into our pocketbooks and taking money away from us that we've earned on our own without any help from the government. It bothers me when politicians talk about windfalls to any level of government. All that says to me is that my taxes are going up and they're going to take more of my hard-earned money away. As far as the issue of annual assessments, I think that's a mistake. With the biannual assessments that we've had that we have in place now, we've seen the Albemarle County budget grow at tremendous rates. Even if we cut that rate in half, it would still be the county budget would still be growing at double the rate of inflation every year. I very firmly believe that governments should be the last entity to benefit from an economy, not the first. As supervisor, I would also focus very much on being honest with our citizens about tax rates. This past year, they told us they gave us a 2-cent reduction in the tax rate. That is, in fact, not true. They gave us a 13-cent increase. Virginia Code 58.1-3321 requires that any time your assessments cause your income to go above 101% of the current budget, you have to lower your tax rate so that you only have a 1% increase in the income that the county has. With that in mind, the last round of assessments that we went through, our effective tax rate should have been 61 cents to comply with Virginia state law. If you want to raise that rate, the law goes on to say, you have to hold a special hearing to intentionally raise that rate. Now, I'm certain that the county did hold that hearing, but they held that hearing so that they could raise our rates, take more of our money, and then sell it to us as a 2-cent reduction. That's disingenuous, and I believe that it is very important for our government to be upfront and honest with us. The state tells us that we have to do it. I believe that it's incumbent upon sitting leaders to be upfront and honest, even if the state doesn't require it. So, we need to control the property taxes. We need to be honest about the property taxes. We shouldn't have annual assessments because we're already increasing faster than the rate of inflation, and we don't need to. So the real simple answer is no. Let's keep the assessment as in every two-year process.
I haven't made a decision yet on annual assessments, and I won't make a decision until there's a public hearing, at which time we will hear comment from the public. I never make up my mind on a matter until the public hearing is held. I'm committed to not increasing government spending as a result of a change in assessment periods. I'm a businessman. I've been in business for 20 years. I make certain that the county operates like a business. We've adopted a five-year business plan for the county so that we look at both the short-term and long-term implications of any expenditure made by the county. The tax rate, if an annual assessment is adopted, should be lowered to adjust for any projected increase in revenues solely from an assessment period change. One of the reasons that an annual assessment is being looked at is the city of Charlottesville is on an annual assessment. We're on a two-year assessment period. It means that if our rates go up over 2 years by 10% and the cities go up 6% a year, often there's a perception that our rates have gone up more than the cities. People, if you ask people in the area, a lot of people don't even know we're on an every two-year assessment period. Most urban counties have gone to an annual assessment period. Part of that is to make certain that the relative values on which taxes are paid is adjusted every year so that the tax distribution is fair. It also allows people to better budget for their expenditures because instead of having a 12% increase at one time, they would get a 6% increase twice if that were the increases in valuation. We heard that from the Gilmore administration. Folks, it's not possible. If you want to have a high level of services in Albemarle County, you have to be willing to pay for them. We're fortunate in that we have the lowest tax rate in the state for any county with more than 90,000 population, and that's before we pay 10 cents of our real estate tax dollar to the city of Charlottesville under a revenue sharing agreement that was signed 20 years ago that prevents the city from annexing parts of the county. You take that 10 cents off and we operate on 64 cents. You have to look far and hard to find many counties in the state of Virginia, even rural counties, operating below 64 cents. Albemarle County has operated very efficiently, and I'm proud of that. By the way, teachers' pay, probably the biggest expenditure we incurred over the last 2 years was to get teacher pay to the top quartile of the competitive market. Our teachers were being paid less than the teachers in Fluvanna County. We were losing teachers. We were finding it hard to hire good teachers. And I joined with the school board to make certain that we corrected that situation over the last 2 years.
Thank you. Mr. Rooker, the next question is yours, formerly question 11. A transportation funding options working group has been considering the creation of a transportation district and a local sales tax dedicated to transportation funding. What are your top priorities for Albemarle County in terms of transportation, and what do you see as the funding sources?
The funding options group was appointed by the Metropolitan Planning Organization, which is a body that I have sat on for the last 4 years. I chaired last year. My top transportation priorities are to complete the Meadow Creek Parkway. There are two parts of that, the city and the county part. They're both in the six-year plan to be completed, and the construction should start in 2008. The Meadow Creek Parkway interchange, which is an interchange at the Meadow Creek Parkway with the 250 bypass, it's very necessary that it be built. The traffic modeling shows that if you didn't have a grade-separated interchange at the 250 bypass with McIntyre and Meadow Creek, 250 would operate at a failing level of service. I worked extremely hard over the last 3 years to obtain $27 million of funding, working with the city and people in the business community here. We've ultimately obtained that money through Senator Warner's office, and we will be able to get the grade separated interchange constructed with the parkway. My favorite or top county primary road project is to complete the widening of Route 29 from the bridge at Sams out to the Hollymead Town Center. The Hollymead Town Center project was required to widen 29 on both sides of the road for about half a mile in front of their project. My top city primary road project is to add the additional lanes on Route 29 from Hydraulic Road to the 250 bypass and to build an additional ramp onto the 250 bypass in front of Best Buy. I would like to see, we have computer sequenced all the lights on Route 29 in the county. We have the only eight-lane section of Route 29 in the state. That computer sequencing breaks down when you get to the city line. The city has the funds to complete that sequencing on down into the city. I'd like to see that done. We need to complete the Hillsdale Drive project. It provides a way for people to move around east of 29 without going out onto 29. The city has that as their top road priority. I'd like to see Georgetown Road get the safety sidewalk and pedestrian facilities and bicycle facilities that it is planned to have, and that we'll have a meeting in the spring to kick that off. As far as funding sources, federal and state transportation funds should come first. We should make certain we should lobby our state officials to get them to pay for transportation. Unfortunately, that has not been happening. We had $4.7 million of secondary road funds in the county 2 years ago. This year we have about $3.8 million. We're expected to have $2.7 million 2 years from now. That means we'll be in the cost of construction will have about doubled in that time period. That leaves us with about 30% of the secondary road funds 2 years from now that we had 2 years ago. I think there are other potential ways of funding transportation, such as revenue sharing. The county is having to put up money to take up the state slack on transportation. We're putting up this year $2 million in the county budget for transportation projects. I can assure you no one has worked harder in this community to obtain transportation funds than I have.
Thank you. Mr. Schoenwald.
Many of the projects that my opponent mentioned are very worthwhile things, and I agree with him that those projects do need to go forward. We also need to look at the impact that new places like Old Trail are going to have on the western side of the county. It's very easy to talk about the eastern end of the county and making sure that people can get up and down off of 29 in the eastern end of the county. But a lot of our development now is going to happen in Crozet and the designated growth areas that are out in that part of the county, in addition to the growth areas up and along 29 North. As much as the neighborhood model places belief that people are going to live and work in the same place, those kinds of models only work until people move in and start behaving like people. The people that are living out in Old Trail are going to go where the jobs pay the best. Inevitably, many of them are going to wind up somewhere on the 29 corridor. That's going to dump additional traffic onto 64 and 250. We need alternative ways to get north-south in the county in the western side. That means that we're going to have to deal with a western bypass at some point. As the western bypass exists on the books right now, it's pretty much a non-starter. VDOT does own a significant portion of the land along the proposed western bypass route, and currently it's renting out those houses and being a very poor landlord of it. If we have once and for all defeated the western bypass as it's currently planned and know it's not going to happen, we need to instruct VDOT to release those properties back so that the county can start collecting property tax on that land again, and those properties can no longer suffer the fate that a lot of absentee landlord properties suffer from. As far as the special transportation taxing district that was mentioned in the question, in conversations that I've had over the last several weeks, I've learned that that special transportation taxing district means an additional gasoline tax in Albemarle County. With the way that prices are going now with gas, adding additional tax onto our fuel requirements would be completely unbearable. We can't allow that sort of situation to happen, and we shouldn't allow that sort of situation to happen. The road funding project, the funding for the road projects has to happen. We need to alleviate the traffic situation, because if we don't build the roads, people are still going to come, and the traffic is simply going to get worse. The projects that have been mentioned need to happen, and we need to look at the reality of what a western bypass will do to alleviate traffic from one of the newest projects going on in the county and the Crozet growth area.
Thank you, Mr. Schoenwald. The next question is yours, and it's formerly question 12. Current county policy requires developers to build roadways to their property lines to allow for interconnectivity of future development of adjacent property. Many have suggested this means the first parcel to develop may have to carry the cost of developing infrastructure to accommodate the potential future traffic from an adjacent parcel, creating an unfair playing field in the marketplace. Do you find this to be equitable? If not, would you support a change?
There are two sides to any piece of development. There's the surface side and the utility side. Surface side usually involves roads. Utilities involves getting water and electricity to a particular development. We already have programs on the books to help developers with the infrastructure, the utility infrastructure side of development. Because of the lack of enabling legislation, we're not able to currently do the same thing with road projects in developing areas. We need to make sure that that enabling legislation is put in place so that the county can work with the road infrastructure and developers the same way that it does with utility infrastructure and developers. Now, this whole issue of interconnectivity brings up a very important concept. Right now in the county, most people don't want their neighborhoods to have interconnecting roads. They want their neighborhoods to be discrete, limited access places where only people that need to be in those neighborhoods are going to be in those neighborhoods. It provides a safer place, it provides a sense of community, and it limits the amount of noise and traffic going through a particular development. For some reason, the county government still clings to the idea of interconnecting roads, even though the population doesn't want it. What we need to focus on, rather than creating interconnectivity and requiring that in future developments, we need to look at the development of arterial roads that go outside of our developments and connect them together so that we can have the limited access, quiet, separated neighborhoods that people truly want to live in. If we listen to what our people actually tell us, we can solve a lot of our problems without having to venture into the realm of philosophical development.
Thank you. Mr. Rooker?
The question really dealt with what happens. It's kind of a situation most people probably wouldn't have an interest in. It deals with what happens when you have a developer who has property along a road and there's another developer who has property behind him, and the first developer is going to develop his property first, and he's going to be required to build the road to the second developer's property line, whether or not that's an equitable situation or not. And right now we require that he do that. But we also provide an administrative waiver if the developer can show it's not a fair situation, he can obtain a waiver from the planning department. If he doesn't like that decision, he can go to the planning commission for a waiver. I would support a change if the change assures that future connections will be made, if it's more equitable, if it's legal, and it deals with the complexities. And there are a lot of complexities, like how much development is going to be on the second piece of property versus the first piece of property. When is the second piece of property going to be developed versus the first piece of property? I see Mr. Franco in the back of the room. I have an appointment with him, I think, a week from now to hear an idea that he has. He's representing the Blue Ridge Home Builders Association to talk about an approach that he thinks might be a more equitable approach to this. I'm certainly willing to look at that. Connectivity, if you look at any area that has a good transportation system, you will see a grid of streets, parallel and perpendicular streets. It is probably unlikely that we're going to connect most existing neighborhoods onto a grid. But when new property is developed, when commercial property is developed, we need to make certain that it's developed with a reasonable transportation grid. Otherwise, every time anybody wants to move, for example, up and down to the north on the west side of 29, they got to get on 29. Same thing on the east side. So it's important that developments have a reasonable transportation grid. And if you go into a grid and you start closing pieces of it off, you'll find that the system starts failing. And all it does is force traffic from one place onto another place, which is often unfair. My opponent said something earlier about a gas tax. The transportation district does not have authority to levy a gas tax in Virginia. If a transportation district were created between the city of Charlottesville and Albemarle County, it would be created for the purpose of trying to jointly finance some transportation projects that are of mutual interest to both jurisdictions. And one way that can presently be funded under state law is that the city and county would sign a contract with the district to provide a certain amount of funds per year to fund the transportation district, and possibly the district could issue bonds to pay for transportation projects.
Thank you. Mr. Rooker, the next question is yours, formerly number 15. A number of people, including former delegate Mitch Van Yeres, have proposed the Ruckersville Parkway. What is your opinion of the Ruckersville Parkway? What is your opinion of a Charlottesville bypass at all?
The Ruckersville Parkway is presently a line on a map that keeps moving. Mitch Van Yeres came to my office about 4 months ago with a planner, and they had a line on a map, and basically it ran from the 250 bypass over on the existing potential Western Bypass route by Albemarle High School, by Jewett, et cetera, until it hits the area around the Rock Store in the Ivy Natural area. And then it would go on to Earliesville Road, follow Earliesville Road out to the little road that runs right in front of the airport, which is 606, and it would follow Route 606 out to the Greene County line. When they presented it to me, they said it would be a four-lane road. It would be limited access, and it would cost about $45 million, and it wouldn't have trucks. The bypass estimate of the cost of the bypass today is about $270 million. The part of the bypass that they were going to use would have cost about $150 million, so I didn't understand how they were going to build that plus another 12 miles of road for about one-sixth of the cost of the bypass. I didn't understand how they could make it a limited access facility. They were talking about running this road on top of Earliesville Road, which has multiple driveways, multiple subdivisions, and Route 606 has the same thing. The only way that I could see that you could do that would be to build access roads on either side of this road, which means you'd have an eight-lane facility going out across the reservoir, out through Earliesville, through the Earliesville area to the airport, et cetera. So I think that they had not thought that through. They claimed it would be a no-truck route, but there's no mechanism to assure that. The Commonwealth Transportation Board makes decisions on whether or not a route is designated as truck or no-truck in a county, and they can change that designation at any time. Now, they since have gone through about three more iterations of the design on that project, so it's a moving target. The Charlottesville Bypass, I've been a long-time opponent of the current Charlottesville Bypass. Governor Warner voted against it when he was on the Commonwealth Transportation Board back in the 1988. It would cost $270 million. All of the traffic figures show that 90% of the traffic on Route 29 is local. If we're going to deal with the traffic problem on 29, we need to make certain that we have a good functioning 29, folks, because, you know, 60-some thousand of the 70,000 vehicle trips a day are local, not through. That road would have gone through six neighborhoods, taken 15 acres of land from the Albemarle, from this school complex, the Albemarle Greer Jewett complex, would have run on steep slopes above the reservoir. And the county has opposed that road for a long time. The state has also determined, our Commonwealth Transportation Board representative and the Commissioner of Transportation, that it is not a good investment of state dollars, and they've backed off from going forward with it.
Mr. Schoenwald.
My opponent actually gave a very, very good description of the Rutgersville project, and for most of those reasons, I really wouldn't be very much in support of that, especially while it's still just a moving target and a line on the map. It's very hard to say, yes, we should go forward with that when every few weeks or every few months it's changing and shifting around a little. We do need to deal with the concept of a Charlottesville bypass. Right now along 29, if you look at Culpeper, if you look at Lynchburg, if you look at Danville, the state is working out ways, and in some cases has worked out ways, to get past those cities without going through them. Charlottesville is the only real problem along 29. It's the only place the state isn't getting good cooperation from. We need to get the traffic that is not local off of 29, off of our local 29, and get it around the city. Every little step goes to help alleviate the traffic burden. As we put more development out in the western part of the county, we're also going to need a Charlottesville bypass to simply move people from the western part of the county north and south, unless we're really interested in overburdening 64 and 250. That's going to be the net result of an explosion of growth in the Crozet area. You're going to have more traffic coming into Charlottesville and then going, for the most part, up 29. If we want to compound the 29 problem, we'll ignore the issue of the Western Bypass and let it go completely by the wayside. The additional factor with the Western Bypass that we have to look at is, as I mentioned earlier, VDOT has already bought a significant amount of the land along the Western Bypass route and is currently renting out the homes that sit in those plots. If we're not going to do the Western Bypass as it currently sits on the books, and since it does go through neighborhoods and does cause problems, it is probably not a good idea to do it as it's currently planned. Let's get VDOT to release that land back so that it can be sold back to the public, so that those neighborhoods can be revitalized, and so that we can start collecting those tax dollars again that we're currently not able to collect on those properties. We have to answer the traffic concerns of the western portion of the county. We've waited too long on the current Western Bypass. It's past its point. We have to plan something new for the traffic needs of the western portion of the county, and we need to develop it, make it happen, before we get to the point where we are now with the current Western Bypass, past the point of effectiveness.
Thank you. We're now going to move to closing statements, and by basis of the coin flip, Mr. Schoenwald, you are first.
The primary issues facing the county are affordability, growth, and respective property rights. These are three very important issues that can all be tackled simultaneously. If we look at affordability as an issue of bringing in better jobs and controlling property tax, we can solve that problem. I'm not suggesting that we're going to get more by taxing less. I'm suggesting that we actually have to look long and hard at the county budget and decide what we want and what we don't want to make sure that the county stops growing at double to four times the rate of inflation, depending on whether or not you're looking at it on an annual or biannual basis. Twice to four times the rate of inflation. Our population only grows at 1 to 2%. The county can't justify that kind of a budget increase. We solve our affordability issue by keeping our property taxes in check and by bringing in better-paying, higher-skilled jobs. As far as growth goes, we need to keep growth out of the rural areas. We need to adopt several neighborhood models that give options to our developers and give them incentives to build in the designated growth areas rather than taking the easy route out and developing out in the rural parts of the county. We can control growth if we go with an incentive process rather than a punishing process. We have to deal with the traffic issues. If we don't build the roads, cars will still come, people will still drive, and our traffic situation will get worse. We can't plan something and plan something and plan something and never implement it. If it's a good solution, if it's going to fix a traffic problem, do it sooner rather than later. On top of all of it, we have to respect the property rights of our citizens. You have to trust that your leaders in your local government aren't going to look at eminent domain as a solution to solve many of the problems that our county faces. It'd be too easy to simply seize people's property and say it's in the name of bettering Albemarle County and preserving its character and nature. Above and beyond anything else, we need to honor the heritage of the people that came from this part of the state that were so instrumental in forming the basis of our republic. If they knew that we were even contemplating abridging people's property rights, they would be appalled, and we wouldn't be worthy of carrying their legacy forward. We can honor property rights, we can solve our transportation problems, we can manage our growth responsibly, we can fix the affordability issue in the county if we have the political will to do it and the vision to make it happen. Thank you for being here, and thank you to the Free Enterprise Forum for hosting this event.
Mr. Rooker?
Thank you. Albemarle County is one of the best places to live in America. In fact, we've been selected as the best place in America to live, our community. We're considered one of the best retirement communities in the country. We've been picked as the best golf community in the country, the best tennis community in the country, the best red population for a community in the country, the best educated population in the state. The reason for all of these accolades is we have an exceptional quality of life. In Albemarle County, we're fortunate to have beautiful mountain vistas, a rolling countryside with open spaces, parkland for everyone to enjoy, plentiful water resources, excellent schools, a low tax rate, high quality health care, low unemployment, economic vitality, a thriving arts community, and an educated and talented population. Those are the attributes that make Albemarle County one of the most envied communities in the country. Albemarle County has an adopted vision statement, which is as follows. To maintain Albemarle County's stature as a quality community by promoting the values of education and lifelong learning, historic and scenic preservation, and economic opportunity, to make the county a desirable place to live in which to grow up, raise a family, and grow old, while preserving our natural resources, rural character, and visual beauty for future generations. That's the vision for Albemarle County that I helped write. If reelected, that's the vision of Albemarle County I will continue to pursue over the next 4 years. I want to thank the Free Enterprise Forum for sponsoring this event and for you for being with us tonight.
Thank you, Mr. Rooker. In closing, I want to take this opportunity to thank our host, Jack Jewett Middle School, as well as each of the candidates. Our community is stronger because of contested races such as these. Each of these men are dedicating a significant amount of their time to their respective campaigns and to their duty as supervisor if elected. I commend each of you for your service to the county. I also want to thank each of you for coming out tonight to learn more about the candidates. The more you know, the better decision you can make. Thank you very much, and good night.